Hi, I'm Robert Levi, and I had nothing to do with the making of Harry Potter and the Freemasons Who Stand Between Danny and Me, which is the movie you know as Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, the second one in the series. Usually you listen to DVD commentaries from the director or writer or star of the film, but my only qualification for talking about it is that I'm uniquely qualified to explain the real secrets buried in this movie, namely how Daniel Radcliffe wants to marry me, and others are keeping us apart. Now, Chris Columbus doesn't have a large stake in keeping us apart, but as director of this movie, he helped encode all these negative messages into the movie, even though Daniel snuck in a few positive things. I mean, just the way he looks out at me is really encouraging. Anyway, the ones who really want us stopped are Time Warner Inc. and J.K. Rowling. And they know that the films and merchandise would tank if their boy star suddenly married a nobody from Jersey. Now you've done it. And don't think I'm a pervert because I like boys or something. Daniel is 16 now, and I plan to wait until Daniel comes of age before marrying him. And I'd like to get to know him better. I'd love to go bowling or shoot some hoops with him or play soccer if he really wants to, although we all know that's part of his British cover story. Anyway, I'll talk about that later. The uncle here is a kind of a personification of Time Warner Inc. The mother is J.K. Rowling. I mean, it's not her doing the acting, it's some other actress, but I mean, she represents this. She's playing along with Time Warner Inc. in order to be crappy to me and Daniel. So here's proof that there are hidden messages throughout the film. Who are the Dursleys having over for dinner in the opening scenes? The name of this client or business associate that Harry's uncle is trying to impress is Mason. They're having the Masons over for dinner, as in Freemasons, as in Illuminati, the secret society which spreads their secrets via coded messages in books and poems and films, and especially radio transmissions. They can't do it on the internets, because it's too easy for their enemies to decode things on computers. So they stick with the tried and true methods like radio and film. And you can ask Brian Wilson whether I'm right about that. Dobby the house elf is meant to be a cheap caricature of my physical features and my tendency to dress in modest clothes. The name Dobby is obviously derived from Robert, or Robbie, as I was known when I was young. It took me a long time for me to break that habit of people calling me Robbie, starting when I was 12, and now this character and the way it's made me talk about Dobby all the time, some of my relatives have had relapses. I gotta keep training them. This was the subject of the first lawsuit I brought against Warner Brothers and Chris Columbus, but the case was dismissed because they said even if it had been a caricature of me, satire is protected speech and it does not count as defamation. If it's not meant to libel me with actual malice, then why will no one hire me for the last 3 years since this movie came out? It must be a coincidence, yeah.
Oh, don't mind that. It's just the
my nose is not... It's prominent, but is not at all that pointy.
Of witchcraft and wizardry this year. There is a plot.
Well, the other interpretation of Dobby is that he's a pale imitation of that other short, ugly, groveling, wrinkled, subhuman character who threatens his hero but elicits sympathy from the audience. That could be Gollum or Dick Cheney. Just kidding. USA. USA. Whatever. This is kind of behind-the-scenes stuff because Warner Brothers is angry with Daniel, and they're saying if he makes one more admission that he wants to marry a man from Jersey, then they're not gonna let him play Harry Potter anymore. One more warning. This score by John Williams has a lot of high bell-like notes, or I don't know if it's a flute or a piano or a glockenspiel. If you turn your radio to 29850 megahertz and play it along with the movie, you hit play at exactly 2100 hours GMT. The high notes from the movie score mesh with the shortwave broadcast and create a subcarrier wave, and it'll spell out the current whereabouts of Daniel Radcliffe. And they use that by the operatives of Time Warner Inc. and the Holland Dutch government and J.K. Rowling's cult of fans in order to torment Daniel in a bunch of ways. They cause him to be late for meetings and publicity events. They put flies on his fish and chips, and sometimes they even cancel his flights. This is an enactment of the scene of what they're afraid would happen if people found out about me and Daniel. Time Warner thinks they would lose their cash cow, and you can see the mother, J.K. Rowling, is mortified by the possibility. They want to lock Daniel in. I'm not sure how they trap him in real life, but I know he's not. He's not allowed to get around and do what he wants to. Oh, I'm sorry I've been quiet for a few moments. There's nothing encoded in the flying car rescue scene. I just get watching it again. I'm too caught up in it to comment. It's nice effects with the car, though. J.K. Rowling's name is kind of a mystery in itself. According to Internet Movie Database, her publisher asked her to use initials because little boys wouldn't want to read a book by a woman. She didn't have a middle name, so she chose K from her grandmother Kathleen, and her first name is Joanne. You can take that at face value, or you can think about it a little more. I think the letters are a hint. Two-thirds of her pen name are hidden by letters. You don't think she's going to hide other things in her stories behind symbols? Of course she is. And then there's her last name, looks like Rowling to some Americans, but everyone says it as Rowling. Does that remind you of anyone? A famous Brit from a while ago who also had an unpronounceable name? I don't know if it's Aleister Crowley or Aleister Crowley, but however you pronounce it, he liked him some magic. My wife pleaded with me to read this this disclaimer on the commentary. The story, all names, characters, and incidents portrayed in this production are fictitious. No identification with actual persons, buildings, and products is intended or should be inferred. That's the disclaimer from the end of this movie, and she wants it to apply to this commentary too. But it doesn't really work because I'm using real names of public figures like J.K. Rowling and Chris Columbus and Daniel. All I can say is what I'm describing are things I deduced from watching the movie closely. To me, it's obvious that Wingardium Leviosa is a coded phrase to give me hope, and I believe Daniel put it there. It's all speculation, but come on, how much more clearly do you expect them to spell it out for you? Grasp your mandrake. I don't have to tell you what that's a code for. Mrs. Weasley's a great actress because you really think she's a bitch. The real crime, I mean, they've done little things to obstruct Daniel and I, but the real crime is with Richard Harris. Richard Harris was alleged to have died of Hodgkin's disease. You can believe that if you want to, but I think he knew too much. He was a smart man, and he could read the signs. He was just too much of a liability, so they took him out. I think Richard Harris liked me too, based on the way he looks at me in the scene where Harry and Ron are under the invisibility cloak in Hagrid's house. That was very wrong indeed, boys. That haunts me. I have nightmares about that. That was very wrong indeed, boys. I paused my commentary just now to check my email. There's nothing from Daniel, which just means that the virus from Time Warner is blocking them still. Scene with the flu powder. I don't like how every Harry Potter installment thrusts kids into dangerous new situations with... They put them in situations with inadequate instructions on how to deal with them. For example, you can think of the... this flu powder is ridiculous. They don't tell him how to deal with it if he says the wrong thing. you can think of Cornish Pixies in this movie also, that scene where they're out of control. And the Griffin in episode 3. It's they act like it's, I don't know, they act like it's so dangerous. And they thrust him in this situation. They don't tell him about it. But then Harry always deals with stuff fine, so I guess it's not as big a deal. He looks so pitiful with those broken glasses. In the background here, you can see two witches about to be making out. They were. All right, at a down moment like this, let me tell you something that brings me up every time. It's a breakdown of the coded phrase, Wingardium Leviosa. You've heard this in a couple of the movies. They use it to make things float, like levitate, I guess. This is a nonsense phrase that Daniel was able to place into everything. Wingardium Leviosa. So what this means is, you take the first part of it, win. Daniel wants me to win, which would mean pushing through all these roadblocks and freeing him so we can be together. Guard. Daniel gives me clues to guard against the machinations of J.K. Rowling and Time Warner Inc. Wingardium. Yum. That's the mutual feeling that Daniel and I have for each other. My wife feels that way about Daniel too, but I think it's just my powerful emotions rubbing off on her. Wingardium Leviosa. Levi, that's me. That's my last name. He specifically says my surname because those are more magical than first names. And then the last part, Osa, which is just like it sounds. Osa. It's an exclamation O followed by a term of respect with a British accent. Sir. Osa. Gilderoy. Okay, now we can go through the 6 degrees of Kenneth Branagh. Oh, I'll wait till he gets on screen. Here it comes. Gilderoy Lockhart. Professor Gilderoy Lockhart. Played by Kenneth Branagh. He was married to Emma Thompson, who was considered for the voice of the computer Deep Thought in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. The character Ford Prefect in that movie was played by Mos Def, who also appeared in God Bless the Child in 1988 with Mare Winningham. I'm not sure if that was a TV movie or not, but you can get it on DVD. Also in that movie was God Bless the Child was Oba Babatunde, who later starred in the 1994 Necronomicon, which was taken from the stories of Howard Phillips Lovecraft, who I read a lot of when I was in junior high, and which everyone knows because I always used to talk about Lovecraft. Coincidence? I think not. Is currently celebrating its 27th week atop the Daily Prophet bestseller list. He had no idea that he would in fact be leaving with my entire collected works free of charge. And that boy Draco is, he's not quite as mature an actor as Daniel. He just scowls and makes faces all the way through. Daniel should give him some acting lessons. But you love that, didn't you, Potter? Ugh. Famous Harry Potter. Can't even go to a bookshop without making the front page. Leave him alone. All right, Potter. You've got yourself a girlfriend. Thank you. Fuck you, Snape. Great stunt work. Now this one line in particular, when Daniel says, "We lost control of the trolley," it's so obviously meant for me. He has that expression, he has the look in his eye, he's coming out of the corner. The first time I was watching this movie, I was sitting in an armchair off to the left of my TV, and he's looking down and to the left, right where I was, off, away from the TV. And you can tell right there that his accent is fake. I'm sorry, he was born in Paramus, New Jersey, in the same hospital where I was born. It's such a fake out. But this is what he's got to do, it's what they make him do in order to keep up appearances. I need to check my email again, just a second.